So can everybody hear me? Is this on? Okay. Hi. I am Tanya Wright. I am an associate professor at Michigan State University. Yes, go White. Even though we're in Ann Arbor today, we have to be careful saying that. And I'm here to talk about observation as a method of assessment. And my wonderful colleague, Amelia Gottwals, who is in science education at Michigan State, had to be out of town for a funeral today. So we're going to lean a little more literacy than science. We work together on a project that integrates literacy and science in the elementary grades. So we're going to do one science example and a few more literacy examples, just because you have me, but I could probably answer questions about what we do with observation in our integrated science and literacy curriculum and in the classrooms that we're working with. Okay, so just to make sure we're all on the same page, we're going to talk just briefly about what is assessment, why observation is an important type of assessment, and I'm focusing today particularly on in elementary grades classrooms, even though, of course, observation is critical for assessment across the grades. That's just my area where I work. And then how we can use observation as assessment in literacy and science instruction. And so for that part, I have some video examples to show you. That's why I was fussing with technology. So I have one where we can actually see a teacher engaging in literacy, in observation for literacy assessment. And then I have two where we're going to have you try it. And you're going to do the observations and see what you might find out if you were in that classroom. So just so that we're all on the same page, when we think about assessment, we're talking about the process of gathering evidence of student learning to inform education-related decisions. And so, of course, the impact of decisions depends on the quality of the evidence that we gather and the associated practices used to gather it. So that's really important. So here we're taking a really broad view of assessment, and including assessment for a wide range of purposes, including at the beginning of some learning, trying to understand and get evidence of students' incoming ideas, experience, interest. And that's really important because we are always asking the question, what do students already know? And then what we want teachers to be saying is, well, if this is what students already know, then this is what I now need to teach, right? Thinking about assessment through a range of informal to more formal opportunities to see how students are progressing in their learning. And we're going to talk a lot about how observation can support that today. And so here we're thinking about a range, right, of discussions, written work, maybe more formal quizzes or tests, trying to figure out where students are with what we're teaching. And then more summative assessments, right? So at the end of a unit, at the end of something we've taught, at the end of the year, where are students in their learning? Are you able to hear me? Okay. I could lean in or talk louder. I use my teacher voice. Okay. So we're trying to understand what students know, how they are doing in their learning. And this is critical for providing instruction, and it's critical for providing equitable instruction, right? We want to make sure that everybody is supported in learning whatever content it is that we're teaching. And so for that, it's really important to figure out where kids are and what they know. Okay. So when we think about observation as assessment, we're talking about a systematic process for collecting evidence of student understanding by watching their participation in activities, but also, and this is really important, listening to how they're talking or engaging with the ideas in their discussions with peers and teachers. So we're not just watching for them to do something, we're listening to what they're saying about their learning. And I think it's really important to say here that this is not It's not like wildlife photography where we're just capturing what happens to be happening. We can actually structure opportunities for observation to ensure that we're able to see how kids are learning what is being taught. Okay, and so the examples I'm going to show you today, one of them is a discussion that just happened, and we're going to see what we can learn from that discussion. But the other two examples were really structured opportunities to observe what kids are up to for the purpose of figuring out how they're doing in their literacy skills. Okay, so I tend to work with young children who are not yet reading or writing independently, and observations are particularly important for understanding students developing ideas at this age. So let's just think about it. For a middle school kid, we might give them an assessment of some type where they're expected to write something about what they know or answer a question about what they know in written form, right? Or read something and respond. But for our young children who are not yet doing that fully independently, one of the ways we can understand something like, well, what are they thinking? What do they so far know about pushes and pulls in kindergarten science? Well, we can't ask them write that down. Right? So we have to listen. We have to ask questions. We have to take notes on what it is that they understand. Similarly, if we're looking at early literacy skills, if we want to know what kids know about which letters map to which sounds, we're going to have to find an opportunity to either observe what they're doing when they try to read a word or to ask them some questions about letters and sounds. But we're probably not going to get them to write some formal information about that. Okay, so in our work where we do integrated science and literacy curricula for young children, we are always thinking about how teachers can be taking notes, observing what kids are saying, observing what kids are doing when they engage in investigations to try to understand what kids currently know and what they still need to learn. I can't help but do a plug while I'm here for the Literacy Essentials. Has everyone heard of the Literacy Essentials? Okay, I'm gonna say what they are just in case, but what we've done as a state is have groups of literacy educators come together and really look carefully at the research and figure out essential instructional practices at different grade levels. So there's a birth through five, there's a pre-K, there's K-3, there's 4-5, there are disciplinary literacy essentials for middle school and upper grades. There are literacy essentials for coaches. There are literacy essentials for administrators. So if you've not visited the site, visit it right now. But one thing that's really important to know that I wanted to point out today is that across and these are really important because as a state, we're trying to get together and say, these are the important things that should be happening in every classroom, every day for literacy. How is that relevant to what we're talking about today? Well, across all the grade bands, assessment is obviously a very important practice for supporting kids' literacy development. And if we look really carefully at what these say, this happens to be the one for K-3, you'll see that we actually pulled out ongoing observation and assessment of children's language and literacy development that informs their education. And even though today I'm saying that observation is a type of assessment, we pulled those words out, the group who was working to write this, which was a large group, just to make sure that everyone understood that we didn't think that every bit of information we would need to understand kids' literacy development in K-3 comes from a formal test. So we can have formal tests that will give us some information, but the day-to-day information we need to know to figure out, did the child learn what I taught yesterday? That doesn't come from a computer adaptive test that we give 3 times a year, right? So every teacher has to be engaged in ongoing observation to really inform instruction and make sure kids are making progress towards the learning goals. And even more specifically, when we look into the bullets, right? So this is one of the 10 essentials for K-3. It's also one of the essentials in each of the grades. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we look at the details of this. It says the teacher prioritizes observation during actual reading and writing. So if we're having classrooms where the teacher is not observing kids engaged in actual reading and writing opportunities, then we're not meeting the essential instructional practices for literacy. Why? Because the only way we can understand what kids are doing as readers and writers, really understand, not know if they are doing some sort of skill towards reading and writing, but really understand, is to see what they do when they attempt to read and write. Okay. And I'm going to show you an example of I'm going to show you a couple examples in a minute. So in order to teach children to read and write, teachers need regular, detailed information about what children do know and what they do not yet know and understand. And that's really, as a teacher educator, how I try to teach my pre-service teachers, my master's teachers, doctoral students, whoever's thinking about it, to say those words. So I'm not looking for something wrong with the child. I'm not looking for a quote-unquote deficit, even though that is in our current law, right? What I'm trying to understand as a teacher is what do they know, what do they need to learn, okay? Because that's what's going to chug us along day by day, right, towards meeting the grade level standards. And so that's for literacy. And here's my next slide. In order to teach children, I don't know why it says children twice, that's my error. In order to teach children to engage in sense-making during science, we need detailed information about what children do and do not yet know and understand. And I could have made a slide for math or art or anything, right? Anything we try to do. It could be for a sport, right? If I'm trying to coach a child to swim better, I need to see what they're currently doing as a swimmer and figure out how they can adjust their stroke, something they do not yet know. So this, to me, is sort of the it of teaching. This is teaching, right? Always figuring out where kids are in their learning and what's the next thing I can teach them to move them towards my goals for them or their goals for themselves. Feel free to stop me with questions, debate, disagreement, anytime. Okay, so how do we do this observation? So that's my plug for observation. So if you're walking around classrooms and you're seeing what teachers are doing, and you don't see notes, grids, rubrics, things like pieces of paper that are out during teaching to take notes on what's going on with kids, that's not where we want to be, right? Especially if we're just relying on external assessments that happen a certain number of times a year, that's not going to give teachers information about tomorrow, right? So here's an example for very young children. If they're learning the sounds associated with letters of the alphabet, and yesterday I taught the letter P makes P, I want to know if kids learned that the letter P makes P, okay? I don't want to wait 3 months for an assessment that tells me low on alphabet. That's not going to give me any information about if we're done working on P and can move on to the next letter, right? So got to see that, got to see notes, got to see grids, got to see rubrics. So hopefully, I will be able to figure out how to show you this wonderful video. As part of the Literacy Essentials work, we were able to capture videos in classrooms of teachers around Michigan. And this video is a really great example of what this looks like when we see a teacher engaged in observation in the classroom. And so I'm going to show you some parts of it to get to know what this looks like, if possible. So let's try it. Oh, yes. Okay.
Ongoing observation and assessment of language and literacy development should inform literacy instruction. In this classroom, the teacher prioritizes observation during actual reading and writing.
So today when you guys are reading independently, I want you to continue to think about the author's purpose, and I want you thinking about why did the author write this, what does the author want me to know or to explain? So you're going to find a quiet spot and an informational textbook that you can read to think about the author's purpose. Okay. The particular standard I'm looking at today is whether or not
providing instruction.
Sorry, everybody. No idea why that happened.
Students understand the author's purpose when they're reading informational text. You can see on the side, I wrote down the questions that I'll be asking students just so I don't forget them on the side, so it's right there in front of me on the page where I'm taking notes. So some of those questions that I'm going to ask today are, what is the main purpose? What does the author want me to know or you to know? And what is the author trying to explain? What do you think the author wants us to know when we're reading this book?
Okay, so now we're gonna see an observation, right? The teacher's observing kids as kids are reading in the classroom, but there's a purpose to the observation, which is to figure out how kids are moving towards this particular standard, which is understanding author's purpose. So it's not just, again, that she's just wandering around with a clipbook hoping to see something, right? She's a very particular purpose in trying to figure out what it is that kids are up to. So I'm just going to scroll along here to the next thing I wanted to show you.
So you think the purpose of this book is that different ways that we can
help pandas.
Let's open up and read a few pages and see if that seems true as we're reading.
There are two kinds of pandas, giant pandas and red pandas.
As my students are reading and writing, I can actually learn a lot about their knowledge and what they know and what they can do independently. And so if I'm able to sit down and have a conference with them and talk to them, I can learn a lot about where they're at as far as skills and strategies. So I can learn what type of books they typically choose. I can learn what their interests are. I can learn how they're decoding. If I listen to them read, I can hear their fluency and how they're able to decode words and if they have correct prosody. And then I can also, through my questioning, hear if they are comprehending and thinking about the book, and especially applying our learning to their reading independently. I can also learn if they're meeting the standards for the grade level, and that's something that I use my notes to specifically check for.
So what kind of information did the author get?
So I just wanted to point out that the teacher is saying two different things, right? So she's engaging in formative assessment, right? So she's trying to learn about kids reading in a whole bunch of different domains that she just described, right? So you can see what they do when they get to a word that they don't know what it says, right? For example, that was one of the things she talked about. But she also said that over time that she can use her notes to understand whether or not kids are meeting a grade level standard, right? So she can take notes for any given day and figure out, well, what instruction do I provide tomorrow, right? But she can also use a collection of notes over time about a child to be able to make some decisions about whether or not the student is where they need to be for grade level. So we want to see observational notes used in both ways.
Exactly what kind of panda we're reading about in this book.
Can you find the sentence where he told us that?
This book is about giant pandas.
So you were thinking when we were reading at the beginning that the author was going to tell us ways that we can help pandas that are in danger. Now we have a little more information. What does the author want us to be able to know about endangered pandas?
That there's two kinds.
And which kind can we guess is probably an endangered kind of panda?
This one.
What's the name of that panda?
Giant panda.
Wow, so interesting.
And this one is about the red panda.
Yeah, exactly. Very interesting. Thank you, Tony.
I have a few different ways that I take notes so that I can have a really good understanding of student knowledge. I often use different sheets to record my observations with students. The sheet that I use today has the standard and then all of the students listed on it, so that as I'm going through, I can take a look and see what students still need practice with that standard, who's able to do it independently. It kind of gives me a snapshot across my classroom. And then I use that to transfer information onto another sheet that has the standards, and there's just one child per sheet for this. And that gives me a really good understanding for each child individually, what they still need to practice or what they're secure with. I write down a variety of things. I write down the title of the book, the genre of the book. I write down answers that the students might give me to the questions. I'm looking specifically if they're able to use the strategy that we're working on, in this case, author's purpose and an informational text. And sometimes I'm writing down some misconceptions they might have or what they can do independently. So I'm note-taking in a lot of different ways. So once they've shown me that they can meet the standard, I mark it with an S, which means secure.
So here, look at how she's structuring the observation.
Snakes. Any idea what the main purpose of this book is?
Different kinds of snakes.
I can see why you're saying that, because I'm using the subheadings here to see this is about swaying snakes, big beavers. I'm noticing the author's naming different kinds of snakes in here. What does the author want you to know about different kinds of snakes on this page?
That these snakes have, some are, bigger and some are smaller.
So is the author telling you about the size of the snakes on this page? Can you show me a spot where the author tells you about the size of the snake?
Right here. It can be, but they can also be small. And
okay, so I wanted to show you this little example to show you a couple of things. One, you can see what it looks like, right? She's walking over, she's talking to the student about her work to get information about how the child is moving towards the standards. But I also want you to notice that she's also teaching in the moment, right? So there's not a rule, because it's observation in the process of everyday instruction, that we're either doing observation, like it's not a test, right? We can help. It's that it's either observation or it's instruction, right? As she sees that the child needs some support, she's providing it. But she's also taking notes on what the child could do without her support and what the child still needed support on. There's another wonderful example I'm going to just show you in a minute, where we see a child who absolutely has mastered the standard, and what the teacher is able to do in the moment from observing is actually move him on to something more advanced. So I want to just show you that briefly. And
my notes, and there's physical representation of what students can do. So it helps me plan for small groups, because it helps me know if there's a particular strategy that one child needs in a small group. And if there's more than one child, I can pull that small group and work with them. Or it helps me to know if I need to check back in with them at a later date to see if now they can do the skill. What are you reading today?
I'm reading National Geographic book.
And Matt, what's the title of this book?
Tiger and Trump.
Ah.
It's not just about tigers. It's about these animals that live somewhere, but they had to move to a zoo.
Okay, so she didn't have to prompt what's the author's purpose, what's the author's up to. He's like, this is what my book's about. It's not just about tigers, even though it's called that. It's about animals that need to go to the zoo. Okay, great. So observation, does the child know the purpose, what the author's purpose is in this book? Yes, because she didn't even need to sit down before he could tell her what it was. Okay, so the wonderful thing about observation to inform instruction is once you know a student can do something, if you know the other standards that you're supposed to support, you can go ahead and teach right into those. Okay, so we're going to do something more.
Interesting, because I'm noticing that this is a chapter book, and it looks like you're on about the last chapter in the book. So have you noticed something that was similar about the other chapters?
Similar. Yeah. That all of them like live somewhere. They were just fine, but then they were not fine. They just kept getting sick, and then they went to a zoo. And the caretakers at the zoo, they cared for them very much.
So, if you think about the author, the person who wrote this, what is the author trying to explain in all these stories about animals that were sick and then went to the zoo?
So now we're on the main idea of the whole text, right?
He's trying to explain about you should care about all animals.
Okay, so the main idea or theme of the text?
Do you have any other stories we've been reading?
Yeah.
What is that?
About Ivan.
How is that book? That's a fictional.
Now we're comparing fiction to informational texts.
Since it wasn't like a true story, it was just made up. It still had animals that are sick and that were not taken care of well, and they ended up going to a zoo.
So what you're doing is you're making connections, because this is a nonfiction book, and you're making a connection to a fiction book called The One and Only Ivan, and you're seeing that in both books, the author wants you to know that it's important to take care of animals.
Okay, so I love the example here, right? Because you can see that she is observing. She's writing down what the student is able to do, but she's also able to adjust instruction in the moment to meet this particular student's need, right? The student has moved well beyond what's the author's purpose in an informational text to share information, and what is that information, but to talk about things like main ideas or comparing or contrasting across texts, like comparing the text he's reading to another text, The One and Only Ivan, because she's there to observe, right? So if you were only doing whole class instruction where you never talked to individual kids or observed what they were up to, the whole class would get a lesson on that informational texts are to inform, and there would be no adjusting to the previous child who needed some support to figure out what the author was trying to tell her from her text, or for this child who needed something, who could engage in text-based discussions that were more, right? That were beyond what the teacher was asking. So we can do this with more... hang on one second. Let me just get back here. So we can do this with more skills that are difficult to assess, but we can also do it starting with our very, very young children with more basic skills. Like, do they know how print works? Okay? So if we structure an observation where we give a little young child, even in pre-K, a book, and we can find out what they know about books and words and how words work. So I'm actually going to see if I can have you all watch a video and be the observers and see what you can find out about what a child does and doesn't know that might inform instruction. Okay. Ready to try it? Okay, so here what you have is a grid, right? So it looks like the type of observation sheet we would want to see in classrooms, especially in kindergarten or pre-K. And let me tell you what all the things on the left mean so that you can look out for them if you're not someone who hangs out with very little ones. Okay, so book orientation. We want young children to know how to hold a book. I don't know if you've seen babies play with a book. They play with them all different ways. They turn the pages, they turn them upside down, they chew them. We want kids to be able to turn it the right way and know how to turn the pages, right? Left to right directionality, that's that we read text in English from left to right, and then we sweep back and we do it again. Top to bottom progression, right? We typically read text in English. From the top of the page, we go to the right, and then we come back. That's something kids need to know before they can really learn to read. Word boundaries. What's a word? That a word is a cluster of letters with a space on either side? Believe it or not, that is something that our young children don't know. So often that's something we need to teach them in the pre-K kindergarten years. Concept of letter. What's a letter compared to what's a word? And these seem to us like very, very simple ideas, but for young children, it really is something we need to teach them if they don't know. So here's an example. You're going to see a much younger me sitting with a child and asking them to do some activities with a book, and we can figure out if the child knows about book orientation, left to right directionality, top to bottom progression, what's a word, what's a letter. Okay? So I'm going to ask you to be the observer and see what you would think as a teacher in this video, if I can get to it. Sorry, I'm a Mac user, so it takes me a minute to figure out where things are. Okay, here we go. Younger me.
Can you show me? Here's the book. Can you show me the front of the book? Good job. Can you show me the back of the book? The back cover?
Here.
Good. Thank you. Can you show me where we find out what the book is named?
I don't know.
Oh, it's right here. It says Cookies Week. And the author is Cindy Ward and Tommy DiPaolo. And now I'm going to start reading. I'm going to open the book for the first page. And I'll read the story, and you help show me where to start reading. Do you know where I start?
I don't.
You don't? I start on here, on Monday. Cookie fell in the toilet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, which way do I go next if I want to read the next page? Can you turn the page for me?
All right. So far, what does this child know and not yet know that we talked about? Orientation of a book? Yes, how do we know that? The front, back, she took the book, turned it the right way, okay. Where we start reading? Not yet, okay. How we go in text in English, from left to right, right? And I always want to say in English, right, because not all languages move from left to right. Okay, so in English, from left to right. Nope, didn't know that one yet. Okay, so these are all things that this child needs to learn. Okay.
Great. And if I start reading over here, there was, where do I go next? Water everywhere. That's right. And then where do I go on this page?
So it's okay to teach into it, just like the other teacher, right? You notice something a child doesn't know, it's okay. We already know they don't quite know it yet. Great moment for teaching, okay? Because it's an observation, it's not a formal summative assessment moment.
On Tuesday, Cookie knocked a plant off the windowsill.
Okay, but does she know that one word that we say is represented by one word in the text? No. But she's starting to figure out something about, you know, picking up what she was shown. Great.
Oh, that naughty cookie. Can I ask you to show me something else? Can you show me? Oh, no, I'm going to show you something. Maybe you can tell me what it's for. See this little dot at the end there? Do you know what that's for? Do you know what it's named? It's named a period.
It's a little hard to hear. I ask if you know what the dot is named and what it's for. And she has no
idea. Take a breath. I'm going to ask you something else. Can you show me a word? Can you point to a word on the page? Can you take these two cards and put it on the outsides of the word so I can see only the word?
Watch what, look at that.
That's two words.
Okay, so I just learned that this child doesn't yet understand the concept of what a word is, because she put her cards outside the two words, okay? Again, I'm showing you this so you can see how rich observational data can be, because I just learned so much stuff that this kid needs to know just from these couple of seconds of talking to each other. A little later in the video, I ask if she can, I'll show it to you, it's so cute. Here, sorry, for one
second. The word? Okay, can you show me an uppercase letter, a big letter? With your cards, put it so I can only see one letter. Or maybe you could just point to a letter. Can you point to an uppercase? Yes, that's an uppercase
what
letter.
Are these guys
well, they're to hide the rest, so maybe we could go like this. Tell me when I see only one letter. Do you see one? Do I see only one yet? Do I see only one yet?
Yes.
Oh, now we see only one letter. And which letter is it? Do you know?
C.
A C, that's right. Can you show me a lowercase letter, a baby letter? You could do it with the cards, or you could just point. You show me an uppercase letter, a big C. Can you show me a little letter? Oh, what little letter are you showing me? What? A U? Oh, very good. You're right.
Okay. So what did we learn? Does the child, if we go back to our sheet here, let's see what we got. Let's see what we learned. Book orientation. Yes. Left to right directionality. After she was shown, right? Okay. Okay. Whoops. Top to bottom progression. So that we're going to sweep back and keep going down the page. Yeah, I think she did that before I showed her. I think. Okay. Word boundaries. No. Okay. Concept of a letter. Yes. So she can name individual letters, but have no idea what those letters have to do with making words. Okay. So maybe turn to someone next to you and think to yourself, okay, from this observational data that took probably 2 minutes, maybe max, to figure out, what would I know as a teacher that this I need to teach this child? Okay, so some ideas of what we need to teach? Word boundaries. Anyone know? Well, the one of the ways that we teach that is we actually take familiar songs, nursery rhymes, poems that kids know, and we have them they can chant them, and we have them start to point along, pointing just to a word that we say, to a word on the page. Okay, so that's a really important thing, but also helping kids to know that what a word looks like on the page is a cluster of letters with a space on either side. Okay, so those are two things that this child needs to know. What else? Right, continuing exposure to the left-right directionality, which you would also get from an activity like that, and making sure that, you know, we sweep back and to the next line. We know that she knows what a letter is, but what I would want to know as a teacher is which ones can she recognize, and does she know anything about the sounds associated with those letters, or is she just naming them, right? Because ultimately, to learn to read, she's going to have to be able to do the sounds as well. So I got a great question for over here, which is if you're doing, you said guided reading groups, but I'll just say if you're doing small group reading groups regularly, how often do you need to sit down with a child and do this? And I'm going to throw that question back to you, which is if every day I'm reading with small groups of children and they're having an opportunity to attempt to read independently, what could I figure out in those moments that I could figure out right here? So if I had kids who were trying to read a book, and they had just memorized it and couldn't point to where they were reading, even in a small group situation, I would know that they don't have concept of word, right? Or if I had kids who were attempting to read and they got to a letter and I said, well, do you know what letter that is? And do you know what sound it makes? And they couldn't give me that information, I could fill in this chart, right? with something about what they know about letters. So here you're seeing a one-on-one planned observation, which I would definitely want to see happening in every kindergarten class at the beginning of school, where you make it to every kid and really know where they are to get started. But I could update this sheet, see how it says date, date, date. I could get a lot of updated information just in the process of regular instruction, right? Unless I was, and then I could go and catch up with kids where I had missed that information. Does that make sense?
So, in a small group, you can do the same
observation. Sure, because if I ask all the 4 to 6 children in a small group to read a text and I'm listening and not chant it at the same time, then I would have no idea. But if they're each reading and I'm walking around and talking to them and conferencing or listening to what they're doing, I would be able to see. I mean, if they're not reading the words in the order of the page, I would know they weren't reading, it didn't have orientation, right? Or if they didn't open to the right spot, or if they skipped words, or if they didn't seem to be able to figure out what to do with words and letters, I could get a lot of this information. Okay. Yes, Erica.
I would also think about the value that teachers see in observation and how sometimes when we expect them to get 3 or 4 guided reading groups done in a session and the pressure of that, that something like this is not, doesn't come up as a priority. And so I think I've seen it happen where they're like, when can we do this? So being able also.
So you're talking about the working with groups of kids versus being able to pull them aside one-on-one to get this kind of information, or are you talking about cover this information today, and so there's not time to take notes and really stop like these two situations?
Just because we've noticed it in our district, I would say that what we found is we needed to really give them flexibility and talk about how a one-on-one conference is a type of small group and that it's just as valuable as.
So you're talking about what, like making time for one-on-one conferencing, like in the previous example or in this example, versus because there may be some value to inform your small groups, right?
Like there should be,
there needs to be some of both.
There.
Right, there, that there needs to be some of both. Right. So, and I think in order to be able to do small groups well, I mean, what we want to see, and again, this is literacy essential instructional practice number 3, is small group instructions that are based on kids' instructional needs. Okay? So if we don't take the time to figure out kids' instructional needs, how are we grouping by kids' instructional needs? So we really need to figure out, if I have a bunch of kids at beginning kindergarten who don't yet have concept of word boundaries, know what a word is, or how a word we say is represented in on the page, that gives me some information that's a small group I can pull together to work on that particular really important piece of information that nobody can read without knowing, right? So, like, this is critical, right? Foundational knowledge for children. So, for me, if it's my class, it's the beginning of the school year in pre-K or kindergarten, I want to get around to each kid to get some baseline information, and then as I'm providing instruction, like the teacher you saw before, whether it's one-on-one or in small group, I'm continuing to update this information as I see that kids are mastering and learning new skills. And I would expect that when we get to our 3 times a year benchmark assessments, if I'm seeing that they're mastering these new skills and moving on, then that's going to be reflected in the check-ins that are beyond my classroom. But if I'm not checking in and I never find out that this little girl doesn't yet know what a word is, and I'm busy just teaching the whole class all about things, and I say, everybody look at this word, and she doesn't know what it is, how is that helping her? It's not helping her to make progress. She's just sitting there in a room of other people that know what's going on, and she's not having the opportunity to learn what everybody else is, right? And that's not okay. Okay. So let's do one more example. We're going to do a science example. So I'm going to give you a science assessment statement. This is from Next Generation Science Standards. This is a kindergarten. This is from one of the kindergarten performance expectations, and we've turned it into an assessment statement. So students can ask questions to obtain information about the purpose of weather forecasting to prepare for and respond to severe weather. Okay? So we want kids to understand something about the fact that the reason we really pay attention to weather is to be able to plan and prepare for particular types of weather. And for kindergarten, severe weather might be something like, I have to wear my coat because there's going to be it's going to be cold, right? So it doesn't have to be dramatic severe weather in an adult conception of that, okay? So I want to show you a sample discussion from a real kindergarten classroom. And if you were the teacher of that classroom, the teacher's participating, this is actually a whole group discussion, what could we find out about what kids know about the purpose of weather forecasting or weather to prepare for and respond to severe weather from this conversation that happened really very organically in the classroom? So I will read the discussion to you. Okay. Jordan asks, are we going to have indoor recess? The teacher says, well, when do we have indoor recess? And Jordan says, when it's rainy or snowy. And Cheyenne says, or really cold. And the teacher says, well, is it any of those things today? And the students say, no. And Jordan says, but it is gray outside. And the teacher says, okay, so how would a meteorologist talk about gray outside? And Jordan says, well, partly cloudy. And Cheyenne says, what? This is kindergarten. They've been learning about weather and climate and science. They are doing one of our units. But this wasn't part of the unit, okay? This just happened in the classroom. They're doing this in science, but this is just happening, right? That's a really common. Are we going to have indoor recess? I mean, that's all winter long, okay? Why do you say cloudy? Do you have evidence? And Cheyenne says, well, there's no blue sky, no sun at all, no shadows on the ground. And the teacher goes on to say, well, do clouds always mean rain? And the students say no. And this conversation continues. Okay. So I'm a teacher, and I'm trying to use this as a moment to understand something about how the students in my class understand the purpose of weather forecasting to prepare for and respond to severe weather, and that they know something about weather, because that's what we've been learning. So again, maybe talk to the person you talked to before and think about in this moment, which is much more informal than the other two I've shown you, what we could learn about kids developing understanding and ability to make sense of ideas about weather and how weather relates or how we prepare for severe weather.
Okay.
Okay.
So I usually wait for the lull, but there's no lull. So there must be a lot that we can observe from this. So we're going to have a really good conversation right now. Okay, so I'm a teacher, and I have my grid that looks something like this, okay? And I'm very thankful that I have it on a clipboard nearby when this wonderful moment happens, so that right after it happens, I can write something down super quickly while also doing a million other things that I have to do, okay? But it's true, you can, right, if you have those clipboards stashed all around, because this is the kind of moment, especially since it didn't actually happen during science, where you're going, whoa, the things we're learning are really connecting for kids and impacting how they make sense of the world, right? All right, so what can we know from this? Okay, and being like she's describing different kinds of weather. Yep, so we hear her talking about like when things are really cold or cloudy or no blue sky, no sun at all, no shadows on the ground, right? So she's very much able to describe the weather.
And she also like uses the vocabulary that
Jordan
uses the weather, whereas
Jordan
just says it's gray outside.
So she has picked up, although later he says partly cloudy, but she's definitely integrated the language that has been part of the science conversations into her discussions about weather, okay? Responding to the teacher asking for evidence, right? So when the teacher asks for evidence, she starts to speak in this very kind of science type of language, right? Which is very descriptive, right? So it's not just a generalization; it's the details. Like she's learned something. She's been taught. You know, they're observing the weather every day in their class. And so she's using the types of words you say when you observe carefully what's going on. So we're really excited about that. So I'd be writing that down.
Jordan has applied the knowledge that weather impacts our daily activity by saying, just seeing the weather and then saying, oh, are we having an indoor recess?
Right. So if we're talking about how our weather, even if it's not dramatic, of weather events impacts our decisions about what we can do in our day-to-day life. We see that Jordan and Cheyenne probably, because she's in a debate with him about whether or not we're going to be in for recess, have both picked up this information and are really thinking about how the current weather conditions are likely to help them predict what they'll be able to do in school. Okay, what else do you see? Right, or when, right. So when the teacher pushes him to ask the, how does a meteorologist say it, he knows it. He just didn't necessarily spontaneously give it. Okay, so that's great. So sometimes when we're not sure if kids know something, we ask the question, right, to prompt to see if they know. And it turns out when she prompts, yes, he does know. Okay, great. What else? Right. So, they're trying to learn something else. Actually, one of the other standards of performance expectations for kindergarten science is about weather forecasting and being able to notice patterns and predicting the weather, right? Certain types of clouds, you typically tell us there's going to be a storm or rain, but not all clouds, right? So we see a place that we can teach into from this, right? So that's really wonderful. And you see that the teacher starts to do that at the very end. Okay, so from this right away, you're observing what kids do know, but also that there might be some overgeneralizations and misconceptions, and we're going to help them make some sense of their world. What else? Okay, from a literacy perspective, I'm very excited that these kids are using these are kindergartners. You checked with me because you noticed that they were using pretty advanced vocabulary that they have learned in their science unit because they're studying weather and climate. So we're teaching them the language to talk about weather and climate so that when they hear a weather forecast and the person on the news or they're looking at it on the internet, those words are there, that they know what it means. Okay, so they're helping to understand their world and the type of words that adults would use to talk about these things. Okay.
From an administrative point of view, if I observed this conversation, I would say that the students feel so safe that they can contradict they can object.
Okay, so you're saying they feel safe enough to object, and I would say from a science education perspective, right, they're engaging in early argumentation.
Yes.
Right? So they're not arguing in an unkind or disrespectful way, but they're engaging in the appropriate type of debate for the discipline, right? They can agree and disagree in a respectful way and bring evidence. They're trying to bring evidence to their statements, which is a practice, right? It's one of the next generation science standards practices is for children to begin to engage in argumentation, and that's what it looks like. I actually have a version of the slide where I add things like evidence, claim, to these statements. So we're seeing kids engage in a scientific practice, which is really wonderful. And again, something they've been taught to do, right? What you're saying is this doesn't naturally occur in classrooms. We have to teach kids how to agree, disagree, provide evidence for their statements. So holy moly, that was like a moment of class. But we just, if we observe carefully, we just learned a ton. We learned what kids can do. I'd be able to say if I'm looking at, for Cheyenne and Jordan in particular, we've learned something about how they are engaging this particular performance expectation. We're starting to see them engage in science practices, which we would really want to be looking for across our science instruction. We're seeing some language and literacy. We're seeing vocabulary. We're seeing some misconceptions that we have to teach into. So we're figuring out what we can teach tomorrow. And so I give you this a small example, just one more way of saying that we want to see this happening in classrooms. Okay. And realistically, what I would mostly see in classrooms is, are we going to have indoor recess? No. Onward, right? That's easily how this could have gone. Or, yeah, of course, it's freezing outside, you know? Done, right? So that more realistically is what could happen, or it could be this major teaching moment where we learn a lot about what kids do and don't know, okay? So all of this is to really, even though the topic is benefits and challenges of assessment, I've mostly been talking about benefits so far. So I want to say some of the challenges, which we've already brought up, right? Of observation as assessment, okay? Challenge, there's a lot going on in a classroom. It's hard to take the time to write these things down, but if we don't, they disappear. So that's a challenge. Challenge, making sure that it's okay for teachers to go and check in one-on-one with kids and figure out where they are in their thinking and their learning. Challenge. If we're going to let this kind of conversation and dialogue happen in a classroom, we have to let kids talk and discuss in a classroom and not be upset if they're disagreeing or saying something that might be in conflict with a friend, right? We have to let conversation and dialogue happen and not shut it down. Like, this was not a hand-raising conversation. Right, you can see that. It wasn't a calling on conversation. The teacher didn't say, raise your hand if you want to talk. Just let this conversation happen and let it be a space where it was okay for kids to speak and share their ideas. So that's a classroom climate thing that has to happen to make this. So there are a lot of challenges. And this is what I would say, this is advanced teaching, right? We want, right? This is like what really good teachers can do. But we want everyone to be having this happen in their classrooms. Because every time I think about that, I say, well, but yeah, but how would we ever know what Cheyenne or Jordan or Lily in the previous one needed to know if we didn't take the time to do this? And how could we make sure that everyone in our class was making progress? So just some closing thoughts, and then I will have time for questions. Okay. or debate or disagreement. I'm fine with those too. Observations as children engage in learning can provide rich information to inform instruction. And hopefully my examples today are sort of proof of concept for you about how rich these little moments of observation can be, where we just might not have known, right? Even in the first example, right, the difference between the child who didn't know author's purpose and the child who we could push to bigger things. We just don't know that if everyone's always doing the same thing and we never take the time to talk to kids and observe what they're up to. Observational data informs day-to-day instruction because the teacher can figure out, this is what the child understands so far, and so this is what I need to teach next. And I feel like if you're an administrator and you walk in a classroom and there's a kid there, the teacher, and there's a lesson happening, the teacher should really kind of be able to tell you that. If I point to a kid in my, you know, in the room and I say, well, what does that child already know? What do they need to learn next? That's like, gotta know that, right? Or at least gotta know, I'm not so sure, so that's someone I need to go check in with and talk. So that's an all the time, I mean, that's hard to do for a lot of people in a classroom, but that is what, that's the kind of thinking that has to be happening every minute. Okay. We want to see teachers using observation to inform instruction in every classroom. And I'm gonna just say, remember, observation is an essential instructional practice. So if we're not seeing it, if we're not walking a space and see lots of like clipboards and notes lying around or the teacher having something nearby to write on, it's probably not happening. Or it is, but it's not being documented. And we do need to document because, again, there's 25 children and it's hard to keep track of if we're not having some way to write down what we're noticing. And we also need some time to think about what we wrote down and make a plan, okay, for what to do next. Okay. And then I also want to say that observational data may also provide information for summative assessment. So especially for our younger children, summative assessment is not always a formal test. It can be the accumulation of observations to create enough evidence, observations, work samples, documents, right, to accumulate enough evidence that we are pretty sure that a child has met the standard or goal. Okay. So that was the case where you saw the teacher said she takes daily notes, but then she takes some time to transfer that information onto one sheet for the child, because there's not a good assessment to figure out if a kid knows author's purpose. You might get maybe one item on that on MSTEP, and if it was a paragraph you didn't understand, we'd never know, right? Or if you have an NWEA type of assessment, they are only asking literal questions on that. So you're never gonna know. So the only way we can figure that out is to accumulate observational data over time. Okay, well, I left 5 minutes for questions or discussion. What do you want to know or think? Okay, well, hopefully you're all already on board with this, and there's already tons of observation being used to inform instruction in your schools. And have a 5-minute break. Yes. So they don't know what it looks like. So are you? If you're talking about literacy, I can point you to where you can find lots of examples. Science, there's not going to be as many readily available examples for young children. For older students, yes. So early childhood, I'm having a one-on-one conversation now. So for early childhood,
expected to be treated like they're natural culture. I go to things and they talk about things. It's all things, examples of the older children. And I go talk to my new one teachers and they're like, well, here's an observation, but I don't think you're recording it.
Right.
What do you think?
So it's not worth it.
We have a very large district.
For that, right?
Coming in
online access to all sorts of
for